Hopefully the meditation's going reasonably well. For those of you who still can't settle on an object, I wanted to introduce today more emphasis on the breath meditation. The last two mornings, I talked just generally about letting go, overcoming hindrances, which should work, but sometimes people are so conditioned to doing something. The whole idea of doing nothing at all is so foreign that if you do just let go too much, a lot of people end up just thinking, or falling asleep, fantasizing, and just getting nowhere. So if you had more months to meditate, then what I've said so far would be by far the best way. Just learning how to relax and let go and do nothing, and eventually all the thinking stops and you get very peaceful. And I already mentioned many ways of overcoming sort of the worst of the thinking mind. The little techniques like the mantra and putting spaces between the words, looking at the thoughts coming from a state of not happiness, not contentment, a way of escaping the suffering of life instead of just being here. There's many other techniques, but sometimes it does help to have one thing we watch so everything else vanishes. And again, the simile which I like to bring up is a simile of a TV screen, which many of you watch. And to notice, if you watch a TV screen, when you first start watching it, you can see the frame of the TV, where you can see what's above, below, to the left and to the right. But after a few seconds, and you don't really notice the transition, you just know that it's actually happened. After a while, you cannot see the edges of the screen anymore. You can only see the center. And that's one of the reasons why you can be in economy class in Singapore Airlines and see the movie on this tiny screen, or you can see it in one of these big cinemas with huge TV screens. And once you're focused in, the experience of the movie is the same. And why is that? It is, it's literally because the mind fits into the available space and everything on the outside disappears. So those of you who do watch a movie on the way back to Singapore, if you're that stupid, you can actually, if you're watching that stuff in there, just see if you can notice that after a little while, the upholstery on the seat in front of you, you can't see it anymore. All you can see is just what's in that little box. Now that shows you what focusing does. So if we choose to watch the breathing, we make that our focus, you'll find after a while everything else which is on the outside, to the left, to the right, above and below, vanishes. It disappears. And all that's left is the contents of the screen. Now that's very helpful to know, because if you have got thoughts, or as was mentioned last night, if there's someone snoring in the meditation hall, or banging, or coughing, and stuff like that. Now, one great way to deal with that so-called disturbance is keep it on the edge of the screen of awareness. Don't put it in the center. Because, just like the TV screen, whatever stays in the center, or whatever's in the center, that remains, and everything on the edge progressively vanishes, disappears. So suppose you are watching the breath, you're watching the breath in this meditation hall, watching your breath go in and go out. Any sounds, keep them on the edge. So they're not that important. You're focused on the breath. Yeah, you can hear the sounds, but they're like over here somewhere, they're not right in the center. Our problem is that when we make a big problem out of this and a big issue out of the sounds, and we really get upset about them, then you find the sound, the disturbance is in the center of the screen, and the breath falls off. And that's our problem. Or, if it's a thought which is disturbing you, if you don't give it importance, if the thought is over to the left or the right, soon it vanishes by itself. But if you give more importance and interest to the thought than to the breath, and of course the thought is here and the breath falls off, whatever you center on, and this is not through force, but whatever is in the center of your screen of attention, in this metaphor, that will remain. What's on the edges vanishes. And what's in the centre is what you give the most importance to. And what's on the edges is not so important, so that eventually vanishes. So you choose to watch the breathing, and you make it important without stressing out. All you do is make sure that's in the centre of your screen of intention. That's the main thing. You don't hold it tight, you just give it importance, give it value. And then as long as you know you can allow other things to come into your field of awareness, like sounds, feelings in the legs, people coughing or banging the doors, yeah, that's in there. You don't try and get out of it, get rid of it. You just make sure you're centering on the breath. And then, by itself, quite naturally, all those other things fall away and vanish. So that's one of the reasons why choosing to watch the breath actually can help sometimes. Now, I mention the breath meditation at this stage of the retreat because I have noticed that one of the reasons why people can't succeed on doing breath meditation is often they do breath meditation right at the beginning, when they first come onto a retreat, and basically their mind is not settled enough. Which means the only way they can watch the breath is through force, and too much force. Which means, you know, the mind gets very stressed and tense. When I first went to, it was Malaysia the first time, even before I went to Singapore. And there I was totally surprised. When I taught meditation and during question time, people started complaining about samadhi headache. And I just was, what? You know, meditation headache? You meditate to get rid of headaches, not to get them. It's a de-stress. And one of the reasons for that meditation headache was people trying to hold on to the breath too tightly without preparing themselves, first of all. So preparing yourself, such as by catching up on your sleep, relaxing the body, letting go of a lot of the past and the future, maybe not all of it, but a lot of it hopefully by now has vanished as you settle into this place. Calming down a lot of the thoughts, it means the main obstacles to breath meditation have been dealt with. So your addiction to the past and the future and thinking has been lessened. So that if I invite you to, yes, go and watch the breath, it's much easier to do now. Which means you don't have to force yourself so hard. But when you do watch the breath, the other thing I have to keep on saying at every retreat is please, please, please do not watch your breath at the tip of your nose. Because if you watch the breath at the tip of your nose, even though you've got your eyelids closed, this is what you will do. Because whatever your mind watches, your eyes watch. And if you get cross-eyed like this after 15 minutes, you'll have this special type of headache across here. And many people complain about that. They complain that they've got headache and they've got this tension across. And that's the reason why. Because if you decide, you know, mentally to observe it at the tip of the nose, your actually eyes go down there as well. And you get headaches. So please don't do that. It was so fortunate in many ways, unfortunate in other ways. Now, I've already mentioned I suffer from hay fever at this time of the year. That's why, you know, I get a bit of a blocked nose. And if I cough, I haven't got a cough, what happens, some doctor told me, and it makes so much sense, the guitar goes down my throat to my sort of larynx and just irritates it. So you don't need to give me cough lozenges, it's just a part of hay fever stuff. But that, whenever you have any sort of illness or disability, not really disability, but something which is adverse, you can always turn it to your advantage. And to me, what happened was, for many months of the year, when the teacher said, watch your breath at the tip of the nose, I couldn't. My nose was blocked. There was no breath going in there. He said, no, watch it. It says, it's not. And then nothing goes up there or out because it's all blocked. Hay fever, okay? So I thought, oh my goodness, I'll only be able to meditate maybe 9 months a year. And the other time I'll do something else. And then I came across the Mahati method, where they said, watch the breath at your abdomen. And I thought, yes, for 3 months of the year I can still meditate. And then the trouble became when I became a monk. Because when you become a monk, a young monk, you'll appreciate this because you've been here for 2 or 3 nights now. If you watch your abdomen, maybe about 6, 7 p.m. in the evening, that's so close to your tummy that you're not watching your abdomen, you're watching your tummy, and it's empty, and I'm hungry. You know, the young man, so I like my food. And so, because of that, I could not watch the breath at my abdomen, because I ended up feeling hungry every time. So, fortunately, these were good for me, because you were in a difficult situation, you couldn't watch the breath in your nose, you couldn't watch your breath at the abdomen. What could you do? And that made me sort of contemplate and look at what the Buddha taught. And you know, sometimes you do have these little light bulb moments, not great insights, but really helpful ones, simple ones. When I looked at how the Buddha taught, never once did he say, watch the breath at the tip of the nose. He didn't say, watch the breath at the abdomen. He said, watch the breath. So this is not nose meditation. This is not belly meditation. It's breath meditation. You get it? So you're not watching your nose, you're not watching the belly, you're watching the breath. So when you realize that, now from that realization, now I teach new meditators, if they're going to do breath meditation, I sit them down, say, close your eyes, breathe in and out 3 times, and after the 3rd breath, open your eyes. And these are people who've never meditated before, they've got no more information than what I just said. They close their eyes, and after the 3rd breath, they open their eyes again. And then I ask the question, how did you know you were breathing in, out, the 3 times? They all know that they breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out, to open their eyes after the 3rd out breath. And how did you know? And I said, well, you know, you just know. Exactly. That is how you do breath meditation. Then I tell them, close your eyes, and now watch 3,000 breaths. And they can't do that. But that's actually how you know the breath. The natural feeling, sensation, whatever you call it, wherever it exists, which tells you the breath is going in, which tells you it's going out. That's all you watch. And that was such a wonderful realization for me and for many others. Because when you've got a full nose, you've got a blocked nose, you've got an empty tummy, it doesn't matter. The breath is happening somewhere. So all you need to know is just ask yourself, is the breath going in or going out right now? However you know that, whatever feeling, sensation, source of information that is how you watch the breath. And it becomes so natural and so easy. Because the problem is, even when your nose is not blocked, if you watch at the tip of the nose, have you ever found out that sometimes you can't find it? You know why? Because it's not there. That's why you can't find it. Like sometimes today, this morning, some people will be going to Bodhinyana Monastery looking for me. Where's Ajahn Brahm? They won't find me there. Because I'm here. Last week, I was in Malaysia and Singapore. They came looking for me over here. The breath is supposed to be at the tip of the nose, maybe, but it's not always there. It goes on holiday or whatever. So you've got to watch the breath where it happens to be. In other words, you just ask yourself, am I breathing in, am I breathing out? How do I know? And the extra advantage to this is when you don't locate it anywhere on the body. You know, for years, you know, I just watched my breath. I hadn't got a clue where it was. I wasn't aware of the nose. I wasn't aware of the belly or the throat. I just knew the breath was happening, that's all. And that was very helpful too, to let go of all your body. Because when you have any part of body awareness, such as you notice the feeling on your nose, the whole of the rest of the body is open to you. I mean, for example, just some of the stuff I got into, again, turning adversity into something positive. In that first year in our monastery in Thailand, I mean, they have some of the biggest mosquitoes there. I mean, it's true. I'm not exaggerating. and they are just ravenous. And we would meditate. This was before we had any halls. We would sleep out in the forest. This was in Wat Nanachat. I was one of the first 6 monks who went to stay there. And we would sleep out in the forest. And in the evening, I don't know why they have to do this, in the evening, about just maybe half an hour before the sun went down, we would do our evening chanting and meditate for 2 hours with Ajahn Chah. And that was precisely the time the mosquitoes came out. So this was like the perfect storm. We had these monks, you can see how much exposed skin we have. All our shoulders and arms, you've got these long sleeves on you. This is how we're supposed to dress. You've got hair on you covering a lot. You've got this, I called it so many more seats at the dinner table for the mosquitoes. And as I also say, this was, now in some places in Thailand, I went in some village, I was the first white man they ever seen, ever, in history in these places. That was so remote. And so in this forest monastery, this was the first time the mosquitoes had Western food. So they all told their friends, hey guys, Western food, lots of seats at the dinner table, and for a mosquito, it was perfectly safe. If they try and drink some of your blood, they don't know if you're keeping 5 precepts or not. And that's the end of their dinner. Now just imagine that you go for lunch and you didn't know whether you'd get out alive. That'd be pretty scary, wouldn't it? And especially if you go out to lunch and you find many of your friends get swatted and don't come out for the afternoon. So imagine how scary it must be for a mosquito. But Buddhist monks, they know. Buddhist monks have been in that part of the world for centuries. So it's in their DNA. See a brown robe, safe lunch. So hundreds of them would come on us. And again, I don't exaggerate this story. We would count the mosquitoes on our arms with another monk, this American monk, who was my best friend there, to see who could count the most. And you get up to about 70 or 80, roughly about that number, and you could not count them anymore. You know, they were too close to distinguish. You were totally covered with these mosquitoes. And if you listened, you could hear them slurping your blood. 70 at the time. I did make that up. That was not true. But you can imagine how irritating that is. And a lot of times I'd open my eyes and want to run. Except Ajahn Chah was there. And not only him being there, your teacher was just too afraid of running. But all the Thai monks were there sitting perfectly still. I didn't know until afterwards. And the Thai monks, I think their blood vessels are deeper under the skin or something. And their metabolism is such, because they never got bitten so much. I'm not exaggerating. The Western monks were covered with these bumps afterwards, and the Thais maybe one, and that's all. So they didn't realize what we were going through. But anyway, because I had learned how to watch my breath without locating it anywhere on the body, I could just watch my breath, and soon my body would disappear. Which meant I didn't feel anything on the body. And you know, that was an amazing way of escaping from the irritation of having these mosquitoes all over you. You couldn't, if you brush them away, they'd just do a loop-de-loop and go back down and eat somewhere else. You'd have 2 bumps for the price of one. And so, of course, it's incredibly irritating until you had to meditate. You've got no choice. Otherwise, just, you know, endure a couple of hours of, you know, torture. So you'd meditate. And because I was watching my breath and not watching my nose, you're disconnected from the body. So you got very peaceful, you couldn't feel the body at all. The strange thing was afterwards, when I came out, my friends had lots of bumps on them, but I'd had none at all. Or maybe just a couple. And I thought that, wow, this is like samadhi, deep meditation. It's sort of, it's some magical thing, it keeps the mosquitoes away, like mosquito repellent. We didn't have mosquito repellent or anything like that. But only later on, I mean, years later, about 30 years later, I read an article which said the mosquitoes were attracted to the carbon dioxide coming out of your pores. The higher the metabolism, the more the mosquitoes know you're there. And so it wasn't anything magical or supernatural, it was just basic science. Because I'd gone deep inside and was very still, my metabolism went down so much that hardly any carbon dioxide was being secreted from the pores of my skin. So you literally became invisible to the mosquitoes. It's fascinating. That's why they couldn't find me, they couldn't bite me, because I was too still for them to find. Interesting little bit of science there. But why I got onto this was not just an interesting story to keep you entertained, but it was also the fact that because I didn't focus on the nose or the belly, you could do that much easier. So try not to focus on your body, because once you focus on one part of the body, another part of the body itches, and this one itches, and you've got to put your finger in your ear, and you've got to cough, and you've got to go to the toilet. There's always something which is itching or irritating about your body, which is why that if you can let go of the body as soon as possible, you can get really peaceful very quickly. So, focusing on the feeling of the breath, that which tells you whether it's going in or going out, rather than the nose. And the next thing with the breath is, please do not treat your breath like a maid who works in your house. Go in, come out, now don't go anywhere. Because when we treat it like that, you find the breath vanishes very quickly. You have to treat the breath like a friend. So you can actually hold its hand like a friend and it doesn't try and get away from you. I remember this married man. He'd been married for about 40 years to the same woman. And he told me that when he goes out with his wife, he still holds her hand. After all those years. But he said, before we got married, I would hold her hand out of love. After 40 years of marriage, I hold her hand out of self-defense. Why are you laughing? It's true, that's why people laugh. They can understand. Anyway, so it's like you hold your hand with your breath. In other words, you're friends with your breath. When you have a good relationship with your breath like that, of course it stays with you. You don't have to keep holding it tight. And that also means that if you do the breath meditation, please don't be afraid. Because a lot of time people are so afraid, or if I don't really keep my breath in line, it will disappear and I will lose my breath. It's that fear which makes you tense. You've got to relax into the breath. Just let go with the breath. We're friends with the breath, and then the breath stays with you. A very lovely way of ensuring the breath stays with you if you do the breath meditation is adding a bit of loving kindness onto the breath. Look at your little breath. It's been coming in and out of your body ever since you left your mummy's tummy. It's never stopped yet. Even when you're busy working, even when you're sleeping, your breath has been doing its job without rest, without pause. Have you ever looked at your breath and said thank you? And being grateful that it's done all this work for so many years without failing you. So I look upon my breath. Oh, thank you, breath. You've been so reliable. Any of you who go to work, have you ever found a worker who always has been working every day for the last 40, 50 years without taking a holiday? Your breath has done that. So you have this little way of looking at the breath with gratitude. And then you find it's easier to watch the breath because you're not taking it for granted. And then if you don't take it for granted, you can watch the breath and give it a bit of kindness. It's just so easy to watch the breath. because it's important to us. And if that doesn't work, we've always got these, what we call mantras. You know, these words we say along with the breath, which again, help us stay with our breathing. And you can make up your own mantra. But my favorite one, if you're watching the breath, is to do something like breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. Many little things. If you're sick, and say breathe in health, breathe out toxins. But if you do breathe out the toxins, please make sure there's no one else around to breathe in. No, it's okay. So breathing in peace, breathe in health, breathe in love, breathe out ill will or anger, whatever it is. So you can make up your own little mantras and repeat them again. But when you say something like peace, don't just say the word. Because words have meaning to them. So after you say the word, listen. Peace. 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 If you could only pause after you say a word, the mind will actually go to its meaning. The word is like a signpost. It's pointing to something. And if the mind always follows that, but sometimes it doesn't have time to go to the destination. So say breathing in peace. And the mind can actually feel that peace. Breathe next breath, in breath, breathing in peace. It feels it some more. You're actually creating what that word signifies inside your mind. Breathing out, let go. Let go. And you're coming to know what let go means. When the word stops, it like echoes, it resonates. And the thing it describes is right in front of you. So that's why we can do breathing in peace, breathing out, let go. And we do get peace. We understand what letting go is. That's why we're doing the breath meditation. Now as you start the breath meditation in this way, again, if any other thing comes into your head, any other sounds into your ears or whatever, please don't make a big deal of them. Keep them on the edge. Because otherwise, you know, you get an ache in your knee. I've got an ache in my knee. That means I'm going to probably have an operation. Or maybe have to be amputated. And I heard, I read this in a newspaper recently. There was one guy in India and they actually did amputate the wrong leg. You know, mistakes happen. So, you know, he went into hospital to get one leg amputated and they did the wrong one. Actually, there's a few doctors. Is it really true they actually put on a marker pen, you know, this one on the leg before they... Is that true? With all this high tech, you know, in the best hospitals in the world, still they use a marker pen, you know, to operate this one on the leg. But anyway, sometimes people do make mistakes. So, you know, operated and took the other leg off. I remember my father told me that happened in England when I was a boy. You know, I think there was a guy who had a motorbike accident, had to have his leg amputated, and they took the wrong leg off. And of course, you know, as soon as they found out, the other leg had to be amputated too. He lost both his legs. And as soon as he was healthy enough, he hired a lawyer and sued the hospital. But he lost his case. He didn't have a leg to stand on. Hello. That was one of my father's favourite jokes. The real golden oldie. Anyway, how did we get into that one? Anyway, so you're breathing in. Where's it going? Okay, you got an ache in your leg, that's fine. Keep it on the edge, okay? Don't keep it in the centre. Because if it gets in the centre, you know, the pain in the leg gets huge. So keep it on the edge, and you said keep the centre. It's just the same as if you are, say, watching a movie, or men are watching a soccer match or something. It's amazing. You're watching a soccer match over there, and you need to go to the toilet. You can't feel your bladder anymore. The soccer match is most important. You can't even hear sounds. Many of you wives will know that if your husband is watching something on TV, say, darling, the dinner is ready. He's not ignoring you. He just can't hear you. You know, his mind is totally focused on the match, on the TV. And everything on the outside, you can't hear. Even if you're watching a movie, it's the same. You just can't hear anything else. Two of my disciples here in Perth, Malaysians. They told me this true story. They were watching a movie, husband and wife, in their home, in their lounge room, watching the movie. When it finally finished, they got up for a cup of tea and go toilet. It's only when they got up, they looked behind, hey, something strange. The thing's missing. A burglar had been in the house. And in the room where they were watching their TV, actually right behind their sofa, and they'd stolen so much stuff, and the two people were watching the movie while the burglar was doing whatever he wanted. And I told him, if only you could do that in your meditation. Then you could sit in this hall and no one will disturb you. That's what happens when you get focused. Totally focused on the breath and all these things on the edge. They don't disturb you. And eventually they just disappear. Burglars, people coming and going, you just don't hear them. You don't feel the body. Which means you get focused. And of course, because you get focused, it's so nice. So peaceful. You don't hear anybody. You don't feel the body. You're free. So you start getting into the peaceful meditations of just being with your breath. And because that's all you have, just the breath fills your mind. We call that the full awareness of the breath. So from the very beginning of the breath to the end of the breath, every moment of the breath you can watch. Just like if you do the walking meditation, you don't just feel left, right, like somebody doing military service in the Singapore army. It's not that. You see every moment, every feeling of the body as you move, just like a dancer. There's so many muscle movements just in one step, 1,000 of them, 10,000, and you can feel the whole lot as you move. There's so much going on there. And because it's a very small area and a very simple thing you're watching, you find it does bring up this beautiful happiness, which is the next stage of the meditation. It's not something you do, it's something which happens. You don't tell yourself, yeah, I'm watching the breath, now I'm going to do the delightful, beautiful breath. If you think like that, you haven't understood the meditation. You just carry on what you're doing, just watching the breath, making peace, being kind, being gentle, just being a friend to your breath. And it turns into, in its own time, it turns into this delightful breath. Watching the breath, oh, it's just so nice and so peaceful. Not having a worry in the world, just watching the breath. Have you gone, or maybe not yet because the weather's not been very good, but if you go through walks in the next couple of days, the sun is out now, through the forest, sometimes you can find a nice little place and sit down. And it's so peaceful, without a worry in the world. You're so happy, so content, happy to be here. You don't have to worry about what you're going to have for lunch or about the project you have to write up on the computer or whatever. You're totally at peace and free. Nothing to do, no agenda items to complete. The only thing you have to be concerned about is getting to the hall for 11 o'clock for lunch. That's the only worry you have in life. Lunch. Isn't that beautiful? You get happiness comes up. And that's what you can expect in the meditation. You're just watching the breath and it becomes a delightful breath. You know, sometimes when I teach meditation, that some Australians especially, is that all you do all day, just watch your breath? Don't you get bored? And the answer is no. Surprise, surprise, when you get the awareness of the breath and you get the happiness coming up, you can just watch the breath for hours. You feel you can sit like this all day. Just watching the breath go in, watching the breath go out. I compare it sort of, although it's watching the breath is much deeper. Sort of like you go to the beach. There's some quiet beach somewhere, sit on a rock, and you know, you just relax on a nice warm day, just watch the waves come in, the waves go out. Just watching the waves come in, the waves go out. You're not doing anything. Just watching the waves come in, the waves go out. Aren't you bored? No, I'm just watching the waves come in. I can do this all day, thank you. And you can. It's peaceful, it's happy, it's satisfying, and it's incredibly fulfilling when you get to the delightful breath stage. And I always say that that is the pivot point of meditation. Once you get to that stage, really you don't need me anymore. You don't need a teacher. Off you go, you just sit for hours, and it's only a matter of time before things like nimittas and jhanas and stuff come. Because you're enjoying yourself. And you're having this wonderful time just sitting here, as happy as can be, just watching the breath come in. Oh, it's nice. Watching the breath go out. Oh, beautiful. Ah, give me more. You get lots and lots of happiness that way. But you can't go expecting it and trying to make it happen. It doesn't work that way. You've got to let it happen. Don't make it happen. And then just the breath is there and you're very peaceful and having a great time. And the last thing with the breath is, after a while, it gets so soft and refined that you can't, you don't even notice the difference between the in-breath and the out-breath. It becomes even. And you ask yourself, is this an in-breath or an out-breath? You just don't know. The commentary gave this great simile of a carpenter sawing a piece of wood. So now this is a piece of wood, this is the saw. When you first saw a piece of wood, your focus is very wide. You can see the handle of the saw, the tip of the saw, a huge amount of the piece of wood you're sawing. But as you focus in, just like you focus in on a TV set on the back of the seat in front of you on the aircraft, after a little while you can only see a small area. Just maybe a couple of centimeters of the wood and a couple of saw teeth, just the place where the saw is meeting the wood. And the rest of the saw you can't see anymore. You're focusing. And he said, you don't know whether it's those saw teeth or the beginning of the saw or the end of the saw or the middle. There's no way you can know. Because you only see two or three saw teeth. So that's just like the breath. When you really get focused and reasonably still, you just don't know whether it's the beginning of the in-breath or the middle or the out-breath, because it all feels the same. They're just like two saw teeth. Just this breath, that's all. And that's an important part of the breath meditation. Because when the breath becomes so soft and smooth that you don't notice any difference between this moment of breath and the next moment of breath, because it's the same, because nothing is changing, the breath disappears. It's gone. If it goes at that stage, please don't try looking for the breath. The breath has done its job. It can't take you all the way into the deepest stages of meditation, but it can take you a long way. Just to say, many of you came here by aircraft. But you can't land the aircraft in the car park of Jhana Grove. It won't fit. You've got to land it at the airport, and from the airport you get a taxi or some other car. Mark gives you a lift. And then you come to the car park here, but you can't drive the car into your cottage. You've got to get out of the car and start walking. So you use different vehicles for different stages of the journey. And this is as far as you take the breath. The place where it disappears. If the breath disappears too early, when you haven't got the beautiful softness and the joy, the happiness, then sometimes you get a bit lost. Which is why, please develop the delightful breath first of all. Make that delight as beautiful as you possibly can. And then when the breath disappears, there's more chance of seeing this beautiful light in the mind, the nimitta, because that's what comes next. With the breath, the whole body has disappeared. The five senses, God, if you follow it according to the instructions. And that's all you've got left is the mind, and that's where it appears. But if you haven't had enough delight with the breath yet, you get to this dull, not dull state, this black state. It's peaceful, but you can't see any light, and there's not enough joy there to give it oomph. And one of the reasons why that people don't get the nimitta is because they don't develop the joy and happiness enough. And that's one of the reasons. You know, I do all this stuff on purpose. Why? In the morning, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. See, it brings joy to people's minds. I do that so you can get nimittas eventually. Because when you get joy and happiness coming up as often as you can, you know, during the day, it's more likely that when you're with the breath you get this joy and happiness as well. Instead of some meditation retreats are so serious, you know, you'd think that you haven't come to Jhana Grove but Guantanamo Bay. Where also people wear orange, so I'm told. But this is meditation, this is relaxation, this is Club Med, this is joyful, this is happy place. So by having that type of playfulness, you know, which I always have, you know, you've known me for a long time, you know, you want to open the door for me and I open the door for you. That sort of playfulness, having teddy bears in the meditation hall, they don't have teddy bears in Guantanamo Bay, so I'm told. Having that gives that more joy into the mind, which means that you're more likely to get joy and happiness in the meditation. Having good food also means, you know, your tummy's happy, your mind is happy. I've often told people, my monks, because, you know, sometimes they're going to ask me for favours, I need to get this, can I get that? And I tell them, don't ask me before the meal. Ask me after a good meal, and if it's something, you know, Ajahn Brahm likes. And if you're happy, of course you're going to say yes. You know, it's just psychology, you should all know that. It's just like you girls, if you want something from your husband. I'm a monk, I know this. Take him out for dinner. Dress up, you know, really nice. You know, and after the last course of this really nice restaurant, the food he likes, talk about what he likes. And you can ask him anything. You know, you soft him up. He's just like putty, plasticine. You can bend him whichever way you want. But what do? You just come home busy from a hard day's work, darling. Can you? No! Please understand human nature. So you get so peaceful, or if you get happy during the day, it's so easier. Have good food, it's so easy to get the happiness in the meditation. It's there all the time. Which means it's so easy to watch the breath. When the breath does disappear, it's so easy to get a beautiful nimitta. And then you're off and having a great time, which is what I wish for each one of you. So I've introduced the breath meditation during this little part. And again, as you were saying earlier in the interview, what's that got to do with insight? Watching the breath meditation is the first satipatthana, the second satipatthana, and when the nimitta comes up, that's the third satipatthana. You're understanding the nature of this body, especially just how it vanishes, the breath goes. The vedana, the bliss, understand what bliss is. And how it develops just from stillness is bliss. And then, when the nimitta comes up, you're face to face with the jitta, with the mind. So this is insight meditation. So when you go home, and they ask, what meditation did you do? We did an insight retreat with Ajahn Brahm. Say, what? He teaches samatha. No. He gave us an insight retreat. I like stirring people up. So it's all the same. So there we go. Any questions about the breath meditation? Yes.
No.
he said, just watch the breath. I've got to be careful sometimes, because I was with Ajahn Chah, and some of the translations of the Thai are not accurate. It's not what he said. And there was one translation in particular. Myself and many other monks were disgusted, because we heard the Thai, and we saw the English translation. That's not what he said. And the monk who translated, oh no, I know that's not what he said, but I know that's what he meant to say. And it's wrong. And a lot of times, again, it is because some of the Asian monks, they do follow that Chinese tradition of always following what your teacher said. And because their teacher said that, and somebody else's teacher said that, and someone else's teacher said that, so the mistakes keep carrying on. Western monks and modern Singaporeans, modern Asians, you question now. Find out, is that what the Buddha said? And there's nowhere, not one place, in the suttas where the Buddha says, watch your nose. Not one place. There is, for those of you who know what the Buddha said, there is one place where he said that you should arouse mindfulness, and they usually translate it, in front of you. And because Westerners think that they live here behind their eyes, they think, oh, I must be here somewhere. And that's one of the reasons why the Westerners try and watch the tip of the nose. You ask an Asian, maybe not your generation, a generation before, where do you live? They say, in here. So that means they put the mindfulness up here somewhere. It's really weird. But the actual word means to actually not to put mindfulness in front physically, but metaphorically, what we say in English, to give it priority. Put it first in your agenda, not in front physically, but first on the list of things to do. So that's why I usually call it priority. So it means when you start, before you start watching the breath, you've got to establish enough mindfulness. Make mindfulness the first thing. That's why I always say do a bit of present moment awareness and silence first of all, before you even start watching the breath. When you make that mindfulness, it's establishment, the first priority, not the breath. Then you can go on to the breath afterwards. So that's really all it means in Pali, in the original. So that's actually where that comes from. And you all know, you can ask many meditators to watch the tip of their nose. Some get it, most people have a lot of trouble. So it's much more effective just following what the Buddha said, just watch the breath, as I just outlined. Very good, okay. Unfortunately, there's no interviews this morning, because I have to go off and do some of my other duties to blessing a Thai restaurant this morning. It's really, really hard having to go there and eat delicious food. But I sacrifice myself for others. So, but I'm sure you can have a nice, delicious lunch as well. So I'll see you this afternoon. Interviews at 3, the piece of paper is out there. Have a lovely meditation. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good.